Hey, I'm Dave, and you're listening to another episode of Dying to Listen podcast presented by the Disc Golf Dyers Guild. So I have Elliot here today from D-Long Dyes, and can't wait to get in to share his techniques and his story. So without further ado, let's get at it. So welcome, Elliot. Greatly appreciate you being on here. And for the listeners, if you haven't seen his work, stop the podcast right now. I don't mind. And definitely go check it out, but we'll definitely plug some of his stuff afterwards. So, hi, nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too, man.
So we'll just get started right here. First question, do you disc golf, which I'm assuming you do because you disc die. What got you into disc golf?
Well, when I was probably 13 or 14, we had an older cousin, and he took me and my brother out to play. And we knew nothing about it. There was just a course in town. And he goes, oh, go get some discs from Walmart. So we didn't know. So we got normal Frisbees from Walmart and showed up. He's like, that's not the right one. They were like, what? I don't know. But yeah, that was the first time I ever played. And I think for a couple of years after that, I didn't really ever get into it. Kind of, you know, I don't know. But when I moved back to Oklahoma from Texas, a friend that I was going to school with got me into it again. And we started playing like leagues and kind of ever since then, I've just played a lot. So, yeah, that's kind of when it started.
What year did you first started playing, and what year did you start kind of getting, I guess, serious about playing?
Yeah, I think that was probably 2014 or 15 when I first started like getting into it again. The first time I played a tournament was 2017. That was my first tournament here in Kansas, and then been playing for the last, whatever, you know, 5 or 6 years since then, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What does disc golf mean to you?
I probably met most of my best friends playing and just, you know, people through disc dying too. I've met a lot of people through that. And yeah, it's pretty, I wouldn't say I'm the most social person, like going out to like, you know, clubs or stuff, but I've met a lot of people through it and it's pretty cool. So yeah, that's, and I also have a lot of fun doing it. So yeah.
So what got you into disc dying?
I'm pretty sure I saw a YouTube video of just like someone doing, you know, that old method where you just like mix shaving cream and dye and like put it on the shaving cream bed and just like mush your disc into it. And I saw that and thought it was fun. So I tried it. It's probably been at least 4 or 5 years now. And I was just like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And it was one of those things where like, there's so many like variables that you don't know, like how much dye you're supposed to put in it. And like, it was just, you know, it was a mess. Everyone starts out with, yeah. But yeah, that's probably the first time I ever tried it.
So I feel like you started before the COVID dyer boom.
Yeah, I was doing it before that, but I probably wasn't very good till like 3 years ago. Like for a long time, it was just a lot of experimentation on like my own discs or like friends that had discs and I would do them for free just to try, you know, practicing on. So yeah.
Yep. Do you remember the first disc that you dyed?
I know the style I tried first, but I don't know the exact disc. It's probably long gone by now.
What was that style?
That style I was telling you about where you like, you make a shaving cream bed, like a flat bed, and then like put shaving cream mixed with dye on it with like a eyedropper. And then like use a toothpick to like pick it out. And I think I may have one in my room I can go grab if you want to see like a little bit of an example of it.
Sure.
Okay. I'll be right back. You can tell how like light it looks, but it's very like dull and like faded, but you can see it's like that little like almost burst effect with the toothpick. Yeah. This is one of the early ones.
Nice.
Probably not the first one I ever did, but yeah.
For like the first ones that you did you just use straight up powder on the shaving cream or did you mix?
Well, I think I mixed it with the shaving cream and then gotcha. Used that on it instead of lotion like a lot of people do. But yeah.
Yep. I feel like shaving cream is a lot of people's first beds because it's fairly easy. I mean, yeah. You put the shaving cream and you don't even have to mix the dye if you don't want to. You just put it straight on.
Yeah.
And shaving cream has a special place in my heart because that was like the first technique of dyeing that I've done. So
you tried? Nice.
Yes. So,
did you do the style with the mound where everyone sprinkles it on there?
Yes.
I still do them because a lot of people like that style, but it's not my most like popular one anymore. But yeah.
I remember the first time I did it, I got a nice burst effect, and the few other times I didn't, and I was trying to figure out why, and did some experimentation.
Yeah.
I don't know how you get your bursts or how you shape or size of the mound that you create for the shaving cream. I guess if you want to explain a little bit of that.
The biggest lesson I learned when I first started was I was trying to put so much dye, because in your head you're thinking, oh, the more dye, the more color I'll get. Mm-hmm. And then you end up with all these air bubbles and like spots on the disc that don't take dye. And so that was one of the first things I figured out was, you know, talking to friends that had done it and just like using the least amount of dye you could possibly use so that you got the most like spread. And like, so that's probably the one of the main ones. But the mound, I mean, I don't know. I usually just try to make it as, you know, perfect as I can. I'm kind of OCD, so I'm like trying to make sure there's no air bubbles in it or whatever. But yeah, it's that's probably the biggest thing for me, is just the amount of dye. I've figured out that a lot of people, and me too, thought that, oh, you just put a bunch of dye on there and it'll, you know, whatever. But yeah.
From looking at your work, I feel like you have a style, but in your own words, do you think you have a specific dye style? And if so, what is it?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I would say a lot of what I do right now is it's shaving cream still, but it's that like swirly style. And, I'm pretty sure the guy's name is Dying to Disc Golf or something like that. I'll send his page to you later, but I saw him post a picture of him doing it, and he does it a little different than I do, so it's not exactly a copy, but I was like talking to him. I'm like, how the heck did you do that? Because like, so he helped me a little bit with it. And then I've pretty much like, I do that same style, but I changed a little bit to where it's like not exactly what he does. If you ask me, his still looks a little better than mine. Like he does the same style, but somehow he puts such a little amount of dye on it that instead of like the dye clumping up into sections, it spreads out into little thin fingers, like all around. It's, I don't know, it's crazy, but yeah, that's kind of where I first saw it, and then talked with him or talked with some other people. And so, yeah.
How did you end up doing like the twist into the burst? Did he do that as well? Or was that your,
pretty much I've been doing spin dives for a long time, you know, with just a brush on a turntable. And he told me that if you put the pan on the actual turntable while it's spinning and just kind of push the disc down into it while it's spinning, that's kind of how you get that effect. So, yeah.
So a few questions about the shaving cream stuff.
Yeah.
What container do you house the bed in?
Pie pans, just, you know, cheap, whatever, Walmart pie pans, the bigger ones I can find, seem to work pretty good. They're light. I found out, like, I have some friends that do it with glass pie pans, and they're so heavy that it'll like weigh the turntable down, so you're trying to like turn it and it's just like stop spinning halfway through.
Nice. So,
the lighter for me is a little better.
How do you elevate that pie pan above your turntable, and does your turntable still have that center nub?
I cut it off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very early when I was doing spin dies, I figured out that some discs work perfectly, but the flatter disc would hit that stupid little thing and it would like not spin correctly. And I'm like, dang it. And then my dad was like, why don't we just cut it off? I'm like, okay. Like, I'm not going to use it for music at any point. So, yeah.
I'm assuming you just use straight up powder dye on the mound.
Yeah.
Do you have any specific techniques to put that dye on the mound where you want it?
I use some Q-tips, like dip it in the dye and just kind of like tap it. And then other ones, I'll have them in salt shakers and just kind of sprinkle it on there. It's weird because I've noticed some dyes have like different like consistencies. So like one color will be like really fine and you like barely tap it and like a ton comes out. And then like another color will be like the most clumpy dye ever. And like, it's like impossible to get it out of the salt shaker. So like I have this color called Scarlet Red and it's just so clumpy. So I have to use a Q-tip for that one. But a lot of colors I'll use a salt shaker.
Are there specific dyes that you do use?
Pretty much all Pro-Chem. When I first started, when I was, you know, experimenting, I tried, trying to think of the brand now. It's been a while. Iodine.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. And they were fine. They had good colors, but they only have like six colors and there's not a lot of variation and they're also not that bright. So it's just, ever since I found out ProChem, I've just been trying their stuff out, and they have so many options. Like, if you want any kind of shade, you can usually find it. And they're way brighter. So
I still use eye dye. Shaving cream and eye dye was my go-to beginner dye stuff. But
eye dye works great. I still have eye dye brown. That's one of the only colors I haven't found from ProChem that I can get a good brown. So I use eye dye brown for any kind of, you know, dog or football or anything like that. So, yeah.
And I definitely noticed the different consistencies with the different colors.
Oh, yeah.
And I know there is a specific reason for that. So don't quote me on what that reason is, because I don't know it exactly. But I know Keith Lampa, he went to ProChem Factory and they explained everything. So that's pretty interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Do you have any other special techniques that you use with your shaving cream stuff?
I mean, I do the burst dyes still every now and then. Another one I really like doing is a lot of people, when they do burst dyes, they'll put like four or five different colors on the whole entire mound. And so like it all just like is the same, you know, spread. And I used to do one where I would put like black on the very edge of the mound and then like red in the middle. And so you get the burst, but it would be like two different sections of burst. So that would be another one that I tried a lot. And that's mostly it.
Is there a specific brand of shaving cream that you like to use?
Yeah, mostly I use some Gillette, and I use some, what's the other one? Well, mostly Gillette, I think, just the original Gillette. I've seen other people use other ones, and they work. I've tried five or six different ones, but there were several that were, like, way too stiff or, like, you know, weren't smooth enough, or there were some that were, like, way too runny. So the original Gillette usually works pretty good.
Is there a certain consistency that you try to look for, if you can even describe what that consistency would be?
The thing is if I make it too runny, you're going to have a really hard time making a good mound. It's going to like fall apart the entire time you're trying to build the mound up. But also, if you make it so stiff, when you're like smoothing it out, you'll get a ton of air bubbles and like big chunks will just come off. So like kind of right in between there, just like, if it's too stiff, I'll add a little bit of water, but not enough to make it, you know, soupy. But so, yeah, it's very like pretty much right between stiff and runny, somewhere in there.
I've done this before, but do you spritz water like on the top with a fine mist, or do you let it wait for a while before you put the disc in?
So I remember someone telling me about that. He was like, I wait 15 minutes after every, you know, whatever. And I tried it, and I didn't really see too much of a difference. So I was like, eh. And then the water scares me, because I'm worried I'm going to make it really runny and like the colors are going to start running together. So I'll sprinkle the dye on and maybe wait, you know, a couple minutes, but I don't sit there and wait 15 minutes. I'm just going to put it on. And the other thing is the shaving cream kind of makes the dye wet. So like you could wait 15 minutes, but it's going to get wet. I mean, it's going to sit there for, you know, 10 plus hours getting wet. So
And that's the other question I have. Two parts. One, how long do you let the disc sit in the bed? And two, do you use any heat?
The only thing I really use heat for at this point is when I'm doing stencils, I'll heat the stencil up to where it'll like adhere to the disc. But as far as like the shaving cream, no, I don't use heat. And then the time, I don't have a set time for the shaving cream swirly dyes. You can leave them in for so long and they never do anything different. They just get darker. But the burst dyes, I felt like if you leave them in too long, sometimes the actual pattern gets kind of muddled up and like doesn't look as good. So when I used to do those a lot, I would leave them in for like at least 6 hours, maybe at the most like 10 hours. But anything after that, I felt like they started getting kind of messed up. So, yeah.
Have you tried any other dye methods?
I have tried some lotion beds a little bit. I do like the spin dyes a lot. The other one I do a lot is mix the lotion and dye and put it on like sections of the disc that I want to be that color, like the solid color. So like that's how I do a lot of my stencil, like filling in the colors on like, you know, characters or whatever logo I'm doing. I'll just mix lotion and dye and apply it to the disc and then leave that overnight and it'll dye that section. I haven't really tried the glue method yet. I've seen a lot of people doing it, and it looks fun, somewhat easy, not too hard, but I just haven't really got into it. But at some point, I would like to try the glue beds. But yeah.
Do you have a must-have dying accessory?
I guess for me at this point, it's got to be the Cricut. I mean, for a long time, like, people would ask me to do stencils, and I would just, like, find someone I knew in the area that could cut one out for me, and it would be, like, this long process of trying to get him to do it and then get it from him, and then, like, and it just got to the point where I just decided to buy one, and it's made things a lot easier.
How do you get your designs, and or do you create your own designs?
I don't create them. I usually find images. Every now and then, I have a friend in Wichita that is a graphic designer, so I've done a few with him. He made his own logo one time, and I did it for him. And like, but most of the time, no, I just find an image that I can use, that, you know, whatever someone requested.
When did you get your Cricut machine?
It's probably been a year or two now. At least a year and a half.
Nice.
At one point, I hit an ace in a tournament and got like $300 or something, and I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna just gonna use this for a Cricut.
That's awesome. What made you get a Cricut over something else?
It was just what I had heard about from other people that they'd been using, so I went with it. I don't know a ton about the different options, so yeah.
I kind of know the next answer to the question that I'm going to ask is, but do you like to wipe the stamp or keep stamps on the disc?
Mostly wipe. I've had a couple where, like, I saved part of the stamp and, like, kept it in with the design, but I would say 90% of the time I'll wipe it.
How do you wipe the stamp off?
Acetone and cotton balls. Works really well. The only thing I'll say is some people, or I found out that if you don't get enough acetone on the cotton ball, it can actually, like, mess the disc up. Like, you can, like, wipe it and it'll, like, burn it. So you want to get a decent amount on there to where it, like, stays wet while you're scrubbing it, but it works pretty good.
Yeah, I've definitely found that you have to keep it saturated. If it, like, dries out halfway between the wiping the stamp, you're going to have a bad day.
Yeah, it's not fun.
For your disc dyeing, do you like to have an inventory of discs that you've dyed, or do you like to dye on demand when they come in?
I don't keep a big inventory, but I keep some discs around. I'll go to the shop every now and then, see something that's a good deal, or, you know, see something that looks fun to dye, and I'll grab it. But majority of the time, I'm just kind of dyeing people's discs for them. The only change to that was recently Wavy wanted to do a collaboration where I had some stuff for sale on his website that he just started. So I, you know, got a bunch of discs and dyed them to get ready for that. So I probably have 20 or so discs upstairs. But besides that, no, I usually just dye people's for them.
Do you have any weird or interesting commissions that you've done?
Nothing too crazy. I've definitely had some people, like, not really know what they want, or they'll just, like, ask you to dye a disc with a stencil dye, but then they have no idea what they want on it. And you're just like, this one dude, he's a big Prodigy fan, I know, on Instagram. He was always wanting Prodigy discs. So I had a couple, and I was like, hey, do you want these? He's like, yeah, I want them. I was like, all right, you want me to dye them? He's like, yeah, do it. And I'm like, okay, do you want anything on them? And he just wouldn't tell me anything. I think I put a cookie monster on one and, like, a dolphin on the other just because I couldn't think of anything. And he was, like, so happy with them. He's like, oh, they're great. I love them. I'm like, cool, man. So, yeah, that was a little funny.
That's awesome. Do you have a favorite type of plastic that you like to dye?
I feel like a majority of premium plastics are going to take really well. Like, you know, Fusion from DD takes really well. Star. A lot of the clear stuff doesn't take as good, but usually you can still make it work. The one I found that takes, like, the worst for me was Z from Discraft. It takes, but it's, like, it just always looks very faded and, like, I don't know. I've just never been a big fan of dyeing Z plastic, but most premium plastics work pretty well, especially, like, Fusion or Star. Prodigy stuff takes really well. Like I said, a lot of premium stuff is going to take good. Z is the only one that I've seen that, like, isn't great, but it'll still work if I have to. You know, if someone really wants it dyed, I can make it work, but, yeah.
Yeah, I found that, like, Innova Champion or, like, that Z plastic, it's difficult with the shaving cream stuff because I feel like those discs need the heat for the dye to absorb better into the disc. So the shaving cream stuff with no heat isn't the best for those type of plastics, but like the Star plastics and all that stuff worked great. So awesome. Yep. So do you have any dying fail stories or discs that you messed up or accidents that you had that stuck out to you?
Yeah, I do. So when I first started with the shaving cream beds with just like, you know, shaving cream dye mixed or whatever, I tried to do these fluid escapes that my friend really liked, and they just came out so bad the first time. So I'm like, oh, I'll just do them again. You know, it'll look way better. And I think I might have dyed it like 4 or 5 times, and it just like gradually got worse and worse and worse. I was just like, by the end, they're just like completely black and like you can't even see them. So yeah, that was one of them. I can actually grab one if you want to see one, because I think I still have one. But they're almost one of those discs where there's like nothing you can record anymore. Let me go grab one 1 second. It's just like every kind of dye I could try on it. And this one's almost as bad, where it's just not even a pattern at all. Yeah, that's my main fail, where I found out, okay, once you've done it, you know, 2 or 3 times, there's not much you can do to save it.
That's, well, you know, you learned something, so that's great. Right? Have you ever dyed a disc again after a period of time? So, like, you know, that one disc you first showed where it was faded. Would you ever dye it again to spruce it up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of discs that I did for myself practicing, you know, a few years ago. And, you know, they got all faded. And now that I'm a little better, I went back and redid a bunch of them. I've definitely done that a few times.
So if you were to start dyeing again, and with the knowledge that you know now, is there anything that you would do differently?
Probably the main thing would just be maybe trying more techniques earlier, like maybe, you know, more like lotion. Some people use conditioner. Some people use like bubble wrap and like all that crazy stuff. And a lot of the stuff I tried early, I just was very like, you know, not that interesting. So, but when you start dying, you kind of have to go through, you know, mistakes and stuff. It's just kind of how a part of it. Like, I feel like you never are going to start, like no one's ever going to start working on any type of art and immediately be perfect. So it's like, I feel like that's somewhat good for you to go through. So you kind of learn, you know, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. Or, you know, so yeah.
Are you artistic by nature, or is this kind of your intro to being artistic?
I don't know. Cause like when I was younger, I drew a lot, but I never was like, I would never consider myself like an artist. So probably this is mostly my intro. I would say it is. Like I said, I drew, but I was never like a good drawer. I just like did it for fun. So it was, yeah.
What does the disc dyeing mean to you, and why do you keep dyeing discs?
It's really fun. So I enjoy doing it. So that's the main thing. Second thing, it's really cool when you're, you know, out on the course and you see someone throwing a disc that you dyed, and that's a pretty neat feeling. I was playing a tournament in Kansas City, which is about 3 hours from me, and I was talking to this guy because he had seen a few of my discs while we were playing together, and he goes, oh, that's cool. The only disc I have dyed is this one, and he pulled one out, and it was one I had done like 2 years ago. I was like, what? I was like, how the heck did you get that? So that was kind of a cool feeling, and so those are the two main things, is I really enjoy doing it, and it's just kind of a little bit rewarding to see people enjoying your work.
That's awesome. For any of the dyers listening, do you have any tips or tricks you would like to impart your wisdom on?
Well, I mean, the blow dryer to heat up your stencils is a pretty good one. That someone told me that a while back, and it helped a lot with getting rid of like air bubbles and stopping leaks on the stencils. Another one, I remember when I was in this group chat with a few disc dyers, and they would tell me about doing lotion dyes on top of discs, and to keep the lotion from getting dried out, they would put shaving cream on it. And I'm like, that sounds so hard. And then one day I figured out you can stack the discs on top of each other, and it keeps that moisture in the lotion. So at this point, when I do lotion dyes on top of discs, I'll stack them, and that kind of keeps the lotion wet overnight to where it'll take better. I've looked back on lotion dyes I did in the past where I didn't do that, and they're like very light and faded and not good looking and like sporadic where they took. But the more recent stuff, it looks a lot better. So that's a big one for me.
Yeah, what I've noticed with the lotion, if it dries out, then it's not going to go into the disc. It needs to be wet for it to the disc to absorb it. And I've never heard of that shaving cream thing before, which,
crazy.
I mean, it makes sense, but that's
seems like a little bit of a mess.
What I do is I take an Ultimate disc and I just put it over mine, and I have like a wet paper towel underneath to kind of keep it moist. But yeah, never heard about the shaving cream stuff before. That's awesome.
The Ultimate one works good. I like that. Usually I'll stack another disc, but the Ultimate makes more sense because you're not having to worry about overlap with the dye at all. So yeah.
Do you have any dyers that inspire you, and or where have you gotten your information to learn how to dye discs?
Yeah, I have a few. When I first started, it was YouTube. I had seen a couple of videos, and then there was a guy in town that had done some dyes. He wasn't like, you know, he wasn't doing it all the time, but he had done a few. So I talked with him for a while when I was first starting. And then just seeing stuff on Instagram where, like, I'll see a different, you know, dyer that did something. Like, the guy I was telling you about, what's his name? Dying to Disc Golf, I'm pretty sure is his Instagram name. And I saw that swirly shaving cream dye and immediately wanted to know, like, how he had done it or, you know, what. So that was a big inspiration. there's a guy, I don't know if he still posts at all, but his name was Andy Dyes. I think he's from, like, Europe. But he has a pretty large page on Instagram, and like he would do some pretty amazing spin dyes, and that was another inspiration I saw starting out early, just trying to figure out how to do spin dyes and like have them look like that.
Yeah.
One guy that's really interesting, I don't know if you've probably seen Jory on Instagram. He's a pretty big page, Jory Fly Dyes. When I first started posting, I posted a disc, a shaving cream dye, and it was like a local tournament stamp from where he lived in Oregon. And he commented that he wanted to buy it because his friend had like ran that tournament and he wanted it. So I sold it to him. And then like a month later, I started seeing him posting like dyes on his page. And then he like started a whole new page for his dyes. And now he's like insanely good. I'm like, good grief, dude. That guy went from like, you know, just a random page that commented on my post to being like one of the best disc dyers in like basically the world at this point. So that was pretty crazy.
For your spin dyes, I guess we can go into that. Few questions. What mixture do you use for your dye, and how do you apply the dye to the disc?
I actually don't mix it myself. I just use, what's it called? Like worm dip that they sell online for people to use for fishing. And I make sure and get the unscented kind. A lot of people will get the, you know, garlic or something. This smells like garlic for forever. But yeah, that's pretty much what I use. The only time I've mixed it was when I ordered black dye. I've seen sometimes the black will be very light when you spin dye it. So I'll put a little bit of Prochem in the actual bottle and just kind of mix it up to help it get a little darker. But majority of the time, the colors they have in there are actually really good. So I don't mix a lot of mine.
Oh, how do you apply the dye to the disc?
I use paintbrushes mostly. My work, we do some touch-up painting on airplanes, so I'll just grab a few paintbrushes from there. I tried buying some, but every time I buy paintbrushes, they would always be the plasticky material for the bristles, and it just doesn't work. And the ones that work that we have are like almost like a horsehair hairy kind of feel, and they work really well. So, but I've seen a lot of people use Q-tips. I'm pretty sure it works. I've just never tried it. Paintbrushes usually work pretty good for me.
Yeah, well, you have your aviation grade paintbrushes. Oh, so yeah. I do anything different.
Yep.
Is there any other dye related stuff that you would like to talk about? If not, we'll go into a more personal note.
Well, the the whole thing with Jory, that's been a really big inspiration. We had a group chat with him. There's a guy named Nate Rack Dyes who does some really good stuff. And then there's a guy named Elevated Dyes that is in there, and we did that for a couple of years now, and all those guys are really cool. They most of them do glue beds, but they're still really fun to talk about, like, different techniques with.
Have you ever vended at any events or tournaments?
Yeah, a little bit. There's a in Wichita, they call it a swap meet, but it's really just a bunch of people meeting up just to sell discs in a, you know, whatever building. And I've done that twice now, I think. I think they're going to do one here in maybe a week or so. So I'll probably do that one as well. But most tournaments I don't do it at because I'm usually playing them. Well, here in town anyway, not big ones. But it's a little bit difficult to try to play the tournament and vend. But yeah, it's the local ones I don't do that much. The only other thing I do is my local shop. I'm pretty good friends with them. And they let me, like, kind of keep a stock of discs in their shop to sell.
Awesome. Yeah, that disc swap, I don't think I've ever heard of that before. That's a great idea. It's also hard to play a tournament and also vend. Yeah. You can only pick one or pick the other.
Right.
And, yeah, that's definitely cool to have your stuff in the local shop. There's a Play It Again Sports here that... Andy is the owner, and he's super nice, and there's a bunch of other dyers in the discs, and he just, you know, whatever we sell, we make, so
cool. Nice, dude. That's awesome.
All right, so we're going to get to know you a little bit on a personal level, so I have a few questions. The first ones that we will start out with is your favorite fave. So what is your favorite food?
There's a lot of good stuff, but I would probably have to say pizza. It's tough to beat pizza.
That is a correct answer.
Yep.
What is your favorite beverage?
Probably root beer. I've always been a big A&W root beer fan. It's always been my favorite. So, yeah, that's probably it.
What is your favorite band or song?
That one's hard. Growing up, I really didn't listen to much rap, but now I listen to a lot of rap. So one of my favorite artists is, his name's NF, and, he does some pretty incredible stuff. I really like Logic. I don't know. There's, you know, Eminem obviously is one of my favorites, but, song, it's pretty tough. I don't know. yeah, it's a hard one, but as far as like artists, those are three of the main, like, my favorites right now. So, yeah.
So don't take this the wrong way, but I did not picture you a rap guy.
A lot of people don't. I don't only listen to rap. I like, you know, rock, or I like 21 Pilots a lot. They make some really good music. But yeah, over the last, you know, whatever, 6 or 7 years, I really got into rap. And so there's a lot of older stuff that I don't know that most rap, you know, fans do. And so, like, I'll hear it for the first time and really enjoy it. And they're like, "You never heard this?" I'm like, "No, I didn't grow up listening to it." So
I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm open to all kinds of music. Oh, yeah. I just did not expect that. So that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Do you listen to any music while you die?
I don't listen to a ton. I mostly watch YouTube. I'll watch whatever show I'm watching or something like that, but a lot of YouTube.
What other hobbies/activities do you have besides disc dyeing and disc golf?
Well, I played basketball for a really long time. I still enjoy it. I don't get to play it as much, but it's still a fun activity. What else? I do some gaming. Not a ton. I wouldn't say I'm the biggest gamer, but I have a Switch and a PS4, so I'll play some Call of Duty or Mario Kart or something like that. Trying to think of anything else. I play the drums and the violin, but I don't play a lot. Obviously, I don't have a ton of free time, but those are, I guess you could call them hobbies. I'll do that every now and then. But, yeah.
Well, one, drumming is hard because you need to use all your limbs in sync.
Right.
But the violin, that is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, drumming's fun. I actually taught myself drumming when I was younger. Just kind of picked it up. I actually drummed the wrong way, technically. I think you're supposed to use your right hand on the hi-hat and your left hand on the snare, and I flipped that. For some reason, that's just how I learned and just kind of stuck with it. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm decent at most instruments. Drums, I just don't have the hand-eye coordination for.
It's a little challenging. The way I learned the most was my brother and I would turn on music on our stereo system, just like really loud. And he played the guitar. He's still really good at the guitar, but I would play the drums along with it. And that made it even harder because trying to keep beat with a pre-recorded song is like way harder than just playing along with someone. So, you know, there would be so many times where we'd be playing and all of a sudden I would like hear myself get off beat and I'm like, no. And then I'd have to like stop and like try to get back on beat.
Is there any specific of music that you like to drum along to or play?
Oh, man. Well, my brother mostly listened to like classic rock. And so a lot of times when we played, it was that. Like, he really liked U2 or like Bon Jovi, that kind of stuff. So we listened to a lot of that. And that was mostly what I would drum to. But yeah, pretty much, I mean, if there's a song that I'll be listening to in my car or something and it has like a really cool beat, I would, you know, want to try playing along with it.
Nice. I can just see you driving along, banging your fingers on the steering wheel. But yeah, play more drums. It's good for you. It's definitely a good workout because, gosh.
You'll sweat a little bit.
So what do you actually do for a living / job?
So I work on airplanes. I'm a mechanic, so most of my job, we take off any exterior like panels for inspections under the surface. We pull the interior out, we change parts. One of the more artistic things at my work, we have to seal with this dark gray sealer any like exterior like seams. Or not, I guess not every seam, but like most seams have to get sealed. So we have to like tape it off and like, you know, put the sealer on, pull the tape off. And there's a lot of people that don't enjoy doing it, but I kind of do because it's a little bit more artistic, I guess. Like you have to make it look nice so it doesn't, you know, obviously the customers are, you know, rich people that have a lot of money and they're very picky. So there was one the other day where this guy had done one and it looked terrible and the customer was all mad about it and they had us scrape all the sealer off and, you know, redo it. So
is that something that you've always wanted to do or you just kind of landed into that gig?
Well, my dad was a mechanic and then he was a pilot. And so he's always been into aviation. So I've been around it a little bit. And, when I was probably 18 or 19, I was down in Texas working on a ranch and I just really didn't enjoy it that much. Like I did it and it was okay, but it wasn't my favorite, you know, industry to be in. And my dad suggested maybe going to school to get my license to work on airplanes. And so I was like, yeah, I'll try it. And just ever since then, it's just kind of gone with it. But it's a pretty good industry. There's a lot of stuff to learn. You know, you get your license, but that doesn't really tell you much about what you're going to be doing because it's all general stuff. So you go into the field and you're like pretty much learning everything for the first time, even though you've already gone to school for it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like there's a lot of, I don't want to say like specialties or things that you can focus on. First thing that comes to mind is like you work on engines or you work on the hydraulics or, you know, the avionics type stuff.
Yeah. When I first hired on, I was in the hydraulics shop for probably about a year and it was fun. It just got a little boring because you were always kind of doing the same thing, but you got to, you know, overhaul components and kind of learn the ins and outs of that. And that was somewhat interesting for a while. And engines, we don't really do a lot of. They usually bring in, on a lot of the planes that we work on, there's the Pratt & Whitney engines, and they'll bring in Pratt & Whitney to work on them. So they have, like, a corner of the hangar that's just, like, blocked off, and they'll just be, like, overhauling an engine over there. But we don't, as mechanics there, we really don't do much with engines besides, you know, filters and oil changes and stuff like that. But yeah.
So do you have your pilot's license?
I don't. My brother is actually a pilot. At one point I thought about getting into it, but I just never got into it. It's a lot of work. It's one of those things where it's like, if you're going to take the time to get your pilot's license and your instrument rating and all the different ratings, it probably needs to be your job. You know what I mean? Like it's a lot of work. Never got into it, but it seems fun. I've been up with my dad and my brother a few times and I just never took the time to actually get my license. But
Yeah, I can't imagine, because I was interested in getting my pilot's license, but it is a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
Even just because I fly drones and I'm trying to get my Part 107 license, and even that is a lot, even though it's way simpler than a freaking pilot's license. Right.
Do you do the drones with the face mask where you're like in the drone? Or is it just like flying from a remote?
Yes, I do have FPV drones where you wear the goggles and you're flying through there. Yeah. It's way different than flying like a DJI Phantom or Mavic where it's all GPS based. The FPV drones, you're in full control and it's way different. Yeah. Like you need training on how to fly that, but yeah. It's, if you like, you're flying like a bird, which is awesome.
Right. Yeah, there was a guy here in town that worked for DGA Discs, and he got me to go out to a field and throw some discs for their like new promo they were shooting, and they had a guy flying one of those drones around filming us while we were throwing, and he was doing some pretty crazy stuff. It was one of those drones that's like a racing drone, and like he was like flying through branches in the tree and like doing all kinds of crazy things to like get a cool angle, and like I was like, it was fun, but yeah.
I consider myself a decent pilot, but there's some crazy pilots out there that you go like, how does that even work?
Right. Yeah, it's what's
all right. Moving on.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Oh, you're good.
Oops, sorry.
You're good.
No, there's like a 2-second delay in here, yeah. So hard not to step on each other's words.
I get it.
Moving on. So if you had to pick 3 discs to play any course for the rest of your life, what would those 3 discs be?
Okay, so I use a slammer, and it's so beat in that it's not even a slammer anymore. It's like dead straight now, but it's one of my favorite discs right now. It's like pretty much if it's within 300 feet and it's, you know, not a hyzer, I'll throw that. So that would be one of them. Trying to think of another one. I could putt with it, so I'd be good on that because it's kind of a putter. I feel like you kind of need a mid-range. I don't know. That's a hard one. I want to take the Justice, but it's so stable that I feel like I would need something. So I'm going to go Verdict. I really like a Lucid X Verdict. It's one of my favorite. I've probably hit, I want to say, 6 or 7 aces with it. It's made me a ton of money as far as ace pots, so that's got to be on there. And then driver, I'm going to go Raider. I really like the Sheriff, but it's a little too unstable to trust all the time. It's usually like a calm day or a tailwind shot. So I'll probably go with a Fusion Raider. It's stable, but it's not flippy. It's kind of in between. So yeah, that's probably the 3 I would take.
Awesome. I'm going to guess you're a dynamic disc fan.
Yeah. When I first started playing here in Kansas, I pretty much used whatever. And it kind of got to the point where I would have like, you know, 3 or 4 of the same disc in my bag from, you know, other brands. And I just kind of decided one day I was going to stick to one brand, and just kind of stuck with them since then. I'm not one of those guys that thinks that one brand is better than all the others. But I really do think Dynamic makes some really good discs. And I live an hour away from Emporia, Kansas, so I mean, it's pretty easy to get their stuff.
I was going to say, aren't they from that area?
Yeah, it's like an hour and 20 to Emporia for me.
A disc is a tool, and there's different tools and manufacturers. Oh, yeah. But yeah, so there is no one best brand besides MVP/Axiom. So,
oh, yeah. I've heard that more than once.
So, Lee Perfect Hole, what was your favorite course/hole that you've played?
One of my favorite things about disc golf is traveling to new courses and playing them, because, you know, after a while of playing, you get bored playing the same one. So I've probably played 150 plus courses at this point. One of the better courses in Kansas that I've played was it's called Clover Cliff Ranch, and it's close to Emporia. But it's maybe not the hardest course you'll ever play, but it's also not easy. And there's a ton of like elevation change and rocks and like trees. It's a pretty neat course. And as far as perfect hole, I'm trying to think of one that I've played that was really good. There was one I played in Oklahoma. It wasn't that long ago. It was a temporary course, but they had a hole on a golf course where there was this huge tree just short of this pond, and it was a par four, and you were trying to put your disc short of the pond so you had an easy upshot. But then the upshot, it was like this tiny green, and the pond was short out of bounds, and there was a sidewalk long out of bounds, and you probably had like 40 feet of inbounds to land in for your upshot. So that was a really cool hole. If you threw like an amazing drive, you could have a really easy upshot. If you threw a bad drive, you could have a really tough upshot and maybe not even run it. You might lay up. But I thought it was a really neat hole. So that's one of the better ones I've played.
Do you have any courses on your bucket list that you would like to play?
Ooh. Most of the ones within my there's some courses in Colorado I'd like to play. I've played Beaver Ranch in the mountains in Colorado, and it was really fun. But there's like three or four other like private courses in Colorado. I think one's called like Bucks Nord or something like that, and they all look pretty fun. So at one point, I'd like to play some more mountain courses in Colorado. But yeah, Maple Hill would be really fun sometime. A lot you see courses on Pro Tour that look so fun. So you know, a lot of those you'd love to play at some point. I'm forgetting some names, but yeah.
Like I've mentioned in other podcasts, I would love to play a Pro Tour course, but I do not want to keep my score.
Yeah, that's one thing. The only course I've really played this Pro Tour, I guess two now, but the only one I can think of off the top was the Jones Supreme and Country Club in Emporia from Worlds. Yeah, those courses are way harder than people think they are. It's pretty crazy.
So, if you had to pick a pro disc golfer to hang out and play around with, who would that be and why?
I don't know. At some point, I'd really enjoy playing around with Ricky. That'd be pretty fun. I think that'd be... He's always been one of my favorite to watch. He seems like a really cool guy, really funny to be around. He seems kind of goofy. There's a couple I have got to play with. When I was in Kansas City playing a tournament there, it was on my birthday, actually. Between days, it was a one-round-a-day tournament. I have a really good friend here in town that's sponsored by Discraft, and he's friends with Gannon Burr. And so between days, we played around with him, like a practice round, and that was really fun. So that's one of the only, like, top...
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. He's a goofy guy. There was a hole at Waterworks in Kansas City that was, 500-plus feet, and I'm throwing a distance driver to even get close, and he throws a fairway, and he goes so far that we lost the disc and never saw it again. It was probably at least a 600-foot throw. I'm like, it's crazy. But yeah, and then my friend here in town, his name's Nolan Ramser. I played with him several times, or a lot of times, actually. When my first ever tournament I played in intermediate, we played together, and I've just been pretty crazy to watch him grow over the years. He's still like, I think he's 18 still, but he throws the disc just about as good as I've seen. He shot the hot round at GBO earlier this year, tied Paul McBeth at, like, I think it was Country Club.
Well, that's awesome that you've got to play with some pros already and have met some. Yeah. The best I can do is I met Ricky Wasaki kind of by chance. A friend and I were going to go play at a local course, and he happened to stop by with his all this stuff there. And he's a lot taller in person than I thought he would be. And I'm a tall guy.
Yeah. It's crazy. Same thing with Calvin. Calvin is so much taller than people think he is. It's weird. Like, I watched him play around at GBO, and you're standing on the sideline, and you're like, holy cow, he's like 6'5 at least. Like,
I feel like he uses his lengthiness to his advantage for getting the correct leverage to throw the discs as far as he does.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. That's one of the things that I've noticed in disc golf is, like, you don't have to have a ton of muscle, but length definitely helps. You got a lot of the guys that are good, you'll see them, and they're not muscular, but they're pretty lanky.
Are there any shout outs to any dyers that you would like to give at all?
Like I talked about earlier, that group I'm in, Elevated Dyes, does some really crazy stuff. Nate Rack Dyes and Jory's Fly Dyes. Jory doesn't need a shout out, but whatever. But those guys do some pretty incredible stuff. They're fun to talk to.
That's awesome. And where can people find you and your work?
Instagram at DeLong Dies, and I have a Facebook page. I'm not quite as active on my Facebook, but I'll, you know, post on there every now and then. But yeah, mostly on Instagram.
We will be raffling off one of your die discs. The disc is yet to be determined, but
yeah.
When this podcast gets released, you will be able to purchase a ticket for only $1. So you have a chance to win an awesome die by DeLong Dies for only $1. There's really no reason for you not to. And 100% of the proceeds go to the artist. So not only can you get an awesome die disc cheap, you're also supporting him so he can continue his awesome dies. So head to dyersguild.co and look for the raffle. Again, the raffle will go live when this podcast is released, and it will be live for 2 weeks. So go check that out. All right. Well, that is all we have for today. Again, I greatly appreciate you being on here and taking some time. Definitely looking forward to some of your dies that you have coming up. So until next time, we'll talk to you guys later. Bye.